This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I'm very much aware of our recent form. We took 1 point from the last 3 games with teams behind us. It's a bad combination in football if you're conceding goals and you're not scoring enough the other end. I'm very much aware of that, but these players need more help and more support, and that's what I'll do them. That's what I'll give them.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast, your favourite Olympic curling podcast. Yes, folks, we've diversified. We can't be wasting our time talking about awful performances.
We can't do it with losers. We want people who get to the business end of things.
Well, yeah, we just want to be talking about business end sports now. I'm David Michael, your host of this. We should just call the podcast Business End Sports or something.
The Business End. That's quite a good name for a podcast.
Focus on whatever's at the business end in sport that particular week. Anyway, joining me on the on the business end is Mr. Chris Budd and Mr. Phil Shaw. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello.
I've still got my fucking cold, so apologies for my nasal tones. Very frustrating, but the wind on the Holt End did not really help, and it was freezing.
You looked... Coldest it's been all season by a mile.
You looked at the temperature and it's like 7-8 degrees, so I dressed accordingly. I didn't have, wasn't going big coat crazy. And that chilly wind left over from that storm, which didn't really, from my experience, didn't really see much of it. So I had to go on social media and watch people tackling it across the country, especially in London. They were the funnier videos. Carnage in London, it's always fun.
Like the O2 getting ripped to bits, literally.
Well, no, more like...
People getting blown over in Croydon, that was quite good.
Spurs Stadium doing a Mexican wave by itself.
Yeah.
But, just people coming out of, Zara's and trying to cross the road, and then their bag of shopping just disappearing into another planet.
Flying over houses and...
Yeah, they're kind of part of the cause, though, weren't they? Mm. How are you, Mr. Shaw, over there? Did you feel the force?
No, for once we missed the storm. There's the odd sort of bit of snow, bit of gusty wind, but nothing major. All the trees in the dark hedges survived this time, so still going strong.
But you may survive climate change yet if this is climate change. But lots of places in America, on the tornado belt, they know a bit more about this kind of stuff. And I just think people in the UK are getting a bit soft, so it's something like this always helps toughen themselves up. You were telling us you deal with claims, don't you?
Yeah. Insurance claims. So at about 50 calls from between 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Friday, so just sort of
from Coventry,
mostly from Coventry, surprisingly enough. Yeah, no, I was wondering if I was going to hear any patrons.
We've lost our stadium. Yeah. It's blown away.
We've lost our midfield.
Yeah,
no, that's Villa. Well, that is.
Got Mr. Purslow. We haven't covered for that.
Yeah, did anybody with a Scouse accent ring up asking if you found his midfield?
No, there's a policy limit. Anything above 10 million is probably not covered.
Right, thank you for joining us on this show. It is the My Old Man Said podcast. It is about Aston Villa, just in case you were confused, as I was very confused at Watford when I was promised a reaction to what happened against Newcastle, and arguably it was a worse performance. We will get into that after, first of all, we try to put that off by talking about other Villa news, the 3 points from the world of football, a bit of media muppetry. If we get anything else we can throw in, just to offset the inevitable discussion of Villa's woeful performance.
Curling?
We've kind of overbaked that one.
Bit of horse semen?
Horse semen, yes, we'll talk about that. That's a good idea. We're not joking either, people. Right, we can talk more about this storm, or if you want, or we can get into the Villa news.
Let's just get on with the Villa news, man. Let's get this one over and done with, I think.
Right, we those two elusive fixtures that were postponed due to the COVID outbreaks earlier, well, at the end of last year, weren't they? The Burnley one's still a mystery, but the trip to Leeds has been rearranged from December to Thursday, the 10th of March, 7:45 kickoff. This is a game they could have played on a FA Cup weekend, could they not?
Surely.
Because Leeds surely have been knocked out.
Yeah, and Burnley played Watford, didn't they not, in one of the gaps? Villa could have easily played Leeds but didn't for whatever reason, probably because Leeds didn't want to.
And I think the clue to why it's on a Thursday, an odd Thursday evening, is because it's live on Amazon Prime. So I think that was the priority here rather than making it easier for supporters. But, you know, we know that tune off by heart, don't we? Mr. McGinn seems to... he hasn't learnt from...
Matt Target's
misdemeanours of transferring out Villa players from their fantasy Premier League teams when they know who's playing the previous evening. He was flagged up for dropping Watkins, and sure enough, Watkins was the only real change in the actual Villa lineup. So, I mean, that's just... I still can't believe that players play fantasy Premier League with their own names, that, you know, these bots or whatever scouting these things can actually see this.
I can't believe anybody with a fantasy team has any Villa players in it at the minute.
Yeah, to be fair, what's the fucking point?
I mean, you know, he's in the Villa team. He should know it's foolish to have one of them in there. But yeah, it's just like, you know, once bitten, twice shy, but obviously not here. They're so dumb. And, you know, you start to piece things together. Well, no wonder they're not any good at the moment, because they're probably too dumb to process bloody tactical changes and formations. But anyway, we'll get onto that later on. Meanwhile, Mr. Barry, Mr. Archer, you will probably see them playing in a Villa shirt soon if the first 11 continue. Louis Barry and Cameron Archer both scored for their respective teams, Swindon and Preston. So progress there. Archer seems to be doing, he'll probably end up with 20 goals this season at this rate. I think double figures, I would say, would be now a target for him for sure. Not much really going on in Villa news, but I did sit on a West Midlands Police Football Unit independent advisory group meeting, which is always interesting because you kind of get the intel of what's happening, and you can throw in your constructive criticism and pointers, etc. Only one game since we last met. Actually, I've still got to do a My Old Man Said patron pod on the last meeting, which I will do because it was kind of an interesting one. Just the Leeds game, which was covered from a Villa point of view, laser pen in L2 of the lower Holt was discovered. I don't think they've found that person yet. So if you're listening, probably not bring it to future games because they've obviously got their eye on you. The referee found a coin on the pitch near where the Leeds supporters were. There was 7 ejections, mostly Leeds, and I think there was 1 arrest in that game. Right, let's crack on with a little bit of media muppetry in Media Muppets. Right, what's in the Media Muppet Trough this week, Phil?
Well, it's the Sun and their wrestling writer, Kostas Lianos, who has decided to turn his hand to Arsenal.
What could go wrong?
I know. He has said that Arsenal have been proven right in their decision to let Emiliano Martinez go and bring in Aaron Ramsdale. So, I'm sorry, what? Was it a straight choice? Did Arsenal use the 20 million that Villa paid for Martinez to buy Ramsdale? No. It's just they realised they'd messed up so badly and they had to go and spend 30 million in Ramsdale.
30 million. Yeah, let's repeat that. 30 million on Ramsdale. Laughable.
I mean, Martinez was sold because they chose Bernd Leno as the number one keeper. And that went so badly, they had the splash of cash in Ramsdale. More to the point, there's been a whole season between events. And in that season, Martinez has won the Copa America and gone unbeaten with his national side. Ramsdale has played once in that period for England, a 10-0 game against San Marino, which any of us three could have played and still not conceded a goal. So it's just pure clickbait as well. I mean, the fact that there's over a season between events, it's like saying what Villa were right to sell Gary Cahill all those seasons ago because they spent 25 million on Tyrone Mings and he had a better season than him last season. I mean, it's just when there's...
Oh, hang on a minute, you know the catchphrase of this podcast: why did we sell Gary Cahill? That is the... I'm gonna get that on a fucking t-shirt. Why did we sell Gary Cahill? You've just triggered me again to ask that question.
That's why I put it in. I was thinking of all the Villa players down the line because they're like, why did we sell David Platt? Why did we sell all these players? And it was like, no, I'll throw Cahill in there just because he's still playing.
Yeah, thanks for that. Right, on to the 3 points. Finally, some good news. From Barry's point of view anyway, fans have completed a deal to buy back their old ground at Gig Lane and to trade going forward as Barry FC. Shout out to fan groups established 1885 and Forever Barry, who have satisfied administrators of the twice former FA Cup winners. I mean, this is something that needs underlining. Barry's not just some tin pot town. They've actually got silverware to their name. They obviously went into administration 15 months ago and were expelled from the English Football League. They should be up and running in time for the 2022-23 season. They've also had a government-run community scheme to... they've had £1 million from that to help buy the ground as well. So,
good luck. So
we wish them luck in their Phoenix status. Point number two, the English Football League and Women's Super League are aiming to bring in a VAR-like system at a low-cost alternative to the video referees used in the Premier League. So what's the main difference here?
No using a lens for offside. The VAR referee sits in the stands with a laptop and there's an iPad at the side of the pitch.
Right. So this is a lot lighter than the setup, Stockley Park, etc. I mean,
sounds great.
Against Watford again, that first decision, straight away you're like waiting. It's almost like dial-up internet or whatever they're using. But yes, this is a lot lighter. You have... the actual person, the VAR referee sitting in the stands using a laptop and pitch side monitor is replaced with an iPad for the ref, and they're doing away with the offside lines as well.
Yeah, just sounds good. It sounds like what VAR should be. I mean,
sounds leaner and meaner, doesn't it? It sounds brilliant.
I mean, the only thing is, I hope the VAR referee sitting in the stands has got like a sort of enclosed area can just some of the decisions they might make. Yeah. But the good bit about it is they say the camera array can be installed in 45 minutes. So they can just go and stick up four or eight, I think is the options are, of possible camera sort of tripods, and that's them good to go. So it could fit in the lower leagues.
Point number three, Thomas Müller, the infamous German centre-forward who we like the Müller mentality. Mm-hmm. It's a winning mentality and it's something that Villa need to get it syringed up their ass ASAP because we're in trouble. We're in free fall.
I think if you read on here, it's going to cost about 170 quid a dose to get it done.
It's a bargain, that.
Him and his wife, Lisa, have been accused of animal cruelty by PETA after selling frozen horse semen. I told you we'd get frozen horse semen into this podcast. The German international has been accused by PETA of unnatural sex acts in their sale of frozen horse semen. Horse semen, for which they charge £170 per dose. Do we have the details on these unnatural sex acts?
No, I think it's just as simple as the fact it's collected instead of deposited and where it's meant to go.
I'm not going to read out your in-joke here. It arose after one of their horses was injured in preparation for the breeding season. So what do we know? Have we got the details on this injury?
No, we don't, unfortunately.
Well, I'm not going to go into any hypothetical guesses here. But Petter basically claimed that they are forced into these unnatural acts to maximize profit. But we need details. What are these acts? Who's the researcher on this show?
Oh, I think it is actually just the fact that it's collected instead of, like I said, it's collected and frozen instead of being used the way it was intended to be.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this is the first time that I can see that having a YouTube visual channel of this podcast would be beneficial, because we could show the footage of these unnatural horse sex acts. But
and our live reaction.
maybe it's a good thing it's audio only. Right, on that note, it's straight into this Watford game at Villa Park.
God.
Luckily it was the day after the storm shenanigans, because I wouldn't have been convinced of going. I think I would have played the fair weather card.
I looked out the window Saturday morning and thought,
the apathy's kicking in, the Paul Lambert stroke Tim Sherwood apathy. He's already in our bones like arthritis. We know what this game was all billed as. It was billed as a reaction to what we'd seen first in the second half against Leeds, where we really didn't do much when it came to finishing off what we'd started. And then a completely abject performance against Newcastle, and this reaction, it's kind of a joke.
Although all the pre-match stats did suggest that Watford would probably win this one, because, of course, every stat was like, wow, Watford are truly appalling. Oh, shit, they're playing the Villa. Of course they're going to win.
Yeah, it was the natural order of things with the football gods, of course. But putting that aside, I was expecting more of a reaction, and...
First half, we were okay.
I can't remember Foster making a save. Let's start with that. We had one shot on target. We had 20 shots. Sounds great. But one shot on target, and I can't remember Foster being troubled.
No.
Apart from a few whizzing over his head over the bar.
Yeah, and the Ings one, and hits the post, which would, I think, was offside anyway.
I can't think of real key moments, but probably the opening moment that I think most people in the ground thought that was a penalty. I was in the hope, so, we're a pitch length away. We had a quick look on the old Sky.
And they had the replays in the ground, which Villa seemed to be having a sneaky, attitude of doing, which I quite like. Put it on the big screen just to undermine the ref. Well done.
Yeah.
Because the club, between me and you, aren't happy about some of these VAR decisions over the course of the last couple of seasons. So when I saw them starting to play replays of these incidents, repeated replays of these incidents, you're thinking they're doing this on purpose because they're getting fucking pissed off.
No, well, just going back to the penalty, it was, when you were looking at it, it was one of those ones that... if it had been given, there's no way VAR was going to overturn it, because the Watford player, his upper body bundled into Ings clumsily enough to make him go over. And then, like, in the act of Ings going over, the ball has maybe flicked off the Watford player's foot at the end of it. You just have to ask yourself, Ings in that position, he's just waiting to do something, to put the ball across the box or have a shot. There's no reason for him to go down at all. So law of averages, you're thinking to yourself, if the referee was sort of up to speed in the game and looking at there, he's going like, there's no way he's going to go down for no reason there. So, something has happened.
Because, my reaction was, if he was in a red shirt, he'd have a penalty though.
Yep.
Yep.
Fill in the team who would potentially be in that red shirt. But there was a lot of a grievance. But you thought, it's early days. I don't think it's going to really affect this game. But that was probably the game over from there.
I mean, I thought, to be fair, I thought we played some okay football first half. We kind of puffed and puffed a bit. Some nice interplay. We didn't make enough chances. And I don't think we didn't work the goalkeeper enough. I think the best passage of football was actually Watford on the counter-attack with the big, the kind of the breakaway chance they had where Martinez makes a big save. And that's kind of, you thought, well, that'll wake Villa up a little bit more, because I thought Villa had been sort of neat and tidy without getting up ahead of steam. But at half time, you thought, all right, fair enough, 0-0, but we can push on here. And then push on, we did not.
What was happening was other teams, they know that if they press us when we've got the ball at the back, that just, we look like well, a lost cause. And, you know, the ball ends up Mings's feet and there's no options. But Watford didn't, they weren't that tight on that. They let us have it. And
similar to Newcastle, really.
Feed it into Louise and, you know, we could get things going. But what they were doing was their three midfielders were, when they were defending, they were forming a shield in front of their back four, and they were coming in tight. They were, you know, very close to each other because Roy Hodgson, basically, his counter to Buendia and Coutinho kind of buzzing around that kind of area. So they completely closed that down. So I said to you at halftime, in our little halftime chat, I said, I think he's got to be proactive at halftime. He's got to bring, you know, literally bring on Bailey or let's, you know, get more out on the wings and stretch them out, because it's almost like they've got a midfield force field in front of the defence that's blocking all that space and really restricting the potential effectiveness of Coutinho. And then when they broke,
they had width.
Those three midfielders completely spread out, left, right, and, you know, they attack with width. And it was quite interesting to watch it. And it was, you know, it's pretty, very well drilled and very effective. And they're quite a athletic team.
Well, they're strong, they're quick.
Yeah, to a man.
Yep. Yeah.
So if they've got a well-built system, then they've always got a chance, I think. And there was no reaction, really, from Gerrard to it.
Well, we spent 90 minutes trying to thread the ball through the eye of a fucking needle. It was like if we didn't score the perfect goal, we weren't going to score.
Oh, and then you have Roy Hodgson in charge of Watford. He'll just like flick up the old playbook. Oh, this reminds me of an Inter Milan match in 1990, whatever. Yeah, we'll just this.
Why does it?
Yeah,
I've seen better teams do this much better than Villa. Oh, this is
exactly.
Easy.
Exactly. Yeah, this is the tactic we'll use. I mean, Newcastle used an inferior version of last week. Where do you see the Watford version of this tactic? This will be even easier. So, and it was.
It was blatantly obvious to me what they were doing to stop Coutinho and Buendia, because Villa do play through the middle and they are more narrow, and anything from the width is basically from the fullbacks, isn't it? And those two guys are not really in form at the moment.
Not really.
Deliveries.
Digne bombs on, he gets involved. Cash is having a pretty torrid time, to be honest, when he crosses the halfway line at the moment.
Yeah.
And looks devoid of confidence. And I think Watford have kind of said, well, all right, we'll just let their wide men have the ball because they ain't going to beat our man. You don't back them to beat their man. And if on the very unlikely event that they toss a ball into the box, we're more than likely to win it. And if we don't win it, we'll just go down with a head injury.
Yeah, there's no height in that Villa team up front.
No, and I think, you know, there was the moments when actually we did get, you know, little passages of play where we had some really neat play in and around the penalty area, but it wasn't quite there. You know, the final pass wasn't quite there. I think Watford would get a lot of bodies in the way. They'd put bodies on the line. They'd like clear it. We actually had a reasonable, for the first time in a long time, a passage of like, you know, persistent pressure in and around their box, corners, etc. But we just weren't doing anything with it. We were so blunt in attack.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, there's
for
one.
The neat approach play, it was kind of, you thought, well, you couldn't really fault us in terms of the quality. We just weren't moving or couldn't move the ball quickly enough to play through their press.
Yeah, Phil.
There was one moment that I think was early in the second half. It was the ball was worked through to Coutinho. Like everything good that happened went to Coutinho, and he saw the space and he played McGinn in. And it's like McGinn's in acres of space on the edge of their box. And it's like he just tries to pass the ball back into the traffic instead of taking a touch and hitting it, or basically just doing anything. Just even a sort of like a straight run into the box, and he could have got brought down, or he could have squared it across with his bad foot. But it was just such poor decision making. It's like,
yeah, that's probably the word for it. Again, for the third game in a row, the decision making has just been atrocious.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Just, I mean, Watford, with their first break, this decision there where he shot, I mean, they just sliced straight through, as in, I think he picked the wrong side of the goal. Martinez made the save, but it was, you just saw him lining up on his right foot, and he thought, this is going top corner in the other side. But I think he, at the corner of his eye, might have seen Mings coming across, so he went for the other side where Martinez had better coverage. And so we dodged a bullet there. And so you're thinking, well, that might be the wake-up call.
Like I said, it is the decision-making. It's really, I mean, it gets to the stage where you're almost, it's idiotic decision-making, sort of between the midfield and the final third. It's just, they're playing the ball into a player with Watford players around them. They're not having a shot when the shot's clearly on. You think of the one that was on for Louise and he didn't hit it and then lost the ball, and then Gerrard just hooks him straight away after that.
That was a decent period of pressure, and Villa players were doing well. They kept, you know, recycling it, and you know, you've got the little dial of momentum, which was actually, oh right, we've actually switched on now, and we're going to give him a game. And then Louise's misplaced pass, and you know, just deflation on the halt, and then within a couple of minutes Gerrard hooked him.
Yeah, and
rightly so. It's just like, yeah, I think my patience is running thin on him as well.
Yeah, so I mean, the decision to replace Louise, the player, was correct, but the decision to replace a midfielder probably wasn't correct, because you can look back and that was almost suicidal. I mean, the midfield was already getting out-muscled and overrun, and then you just take one out of it.
When Watkins came on, I did think, he's kind of throwing caution to the wind here, but I think maybe he's just impatient with what's happening here. But then he did think, well, actually, we have, every time anybody's attacked us on the counter in recent history, we've looked very vulnerable, and suddenly the supposed shield of the defence is now gone.
Yeah, and I think impatience is another problem here, because if you think back to Gerrard's first few games, it was like, right, he's in, he's like finding his feet, you know, he needs to hit the ground running, but nobody was expecting that too much. So like a draw in this first couple of games would have been all right. So Villa played very much like that, and it's like, right, now there's the time of the match where we're going to maybe take a chance, like the last 10 minutes against Brighton, or they were protecting the lead against Palace and they were doing well. Whenever it's like Villa have to force it, it's like, right, a draw is not enough, we need to win. It's almost like there is an element of desperation creeping in now.
Yeah, I always remember Martin O'Neill, where we were very good away from home and would win games just because we had pace on the counter.
And, well, we had pace and power, didn't you? You had Carew, Gabby, Ashley Young, etc.
And, you know, we were decent in defence, so we could invite teams on and then get them. But at home, we were next to useless in terms of breaking teams down, and we really struggled to rack up wins at home. In fact, you know, we were winning more away from home than we were at home. And we haven't really got an identity of what we do here, because, you know, I just explained what Watford did as to how they, you know, put those three midfielders, they came back really tight to close down all the, all the space and create a barrier. And then they've obviously got the athleticism and speed on the counter, but we haven't got that. You know, how do we defend? We haven't really got almost like blue collar midfielders who would tuck in and do that defensive job. It's like left to kind of Louise to ghost about, and apart from that, you know, you got McGinn getting stuck in, but it's not really kind of well organized. It's almost like it's ad hoc.
And as you said, with McGinn, the one who's there who's having to do a lot of the dirty work, I mean, the amount of times he was taking the ball off the centre backs deep, and Ramsey was coming so deep to pick the ball up as well, that's not where you want them. You see where McGinn plays for Scotland and how effective he is. I've sort of used the analogy with McGinn. He's like a grenade. He's not a subtle, like classy, silky, ball-playing, let's run the game type midfielder. He's like a grenade. You pull the pin and you throw it at the opposition and just let him cause damage. He's a blunt instrument. You've got to get him at in a period of the field where he can hurt the opposition. Otherwise, if he's just playing deep, he's not controlling enough.
Yeah, the last thing you want is a grenade in your own half, and that's exactly what happens.
Because you don't quite. It was like we dropped the grenade, and then of course, I think the decision to take Louise off for Watkins, while it was brave, everyone's kind of going, right, okay, hang on a minute, what are we doing here? And then everyone's sort of looking, especially from where I sit in the upper hole, you're looking down and you're trying to work out what the shape is, and it almost looked like a diamond. Yeah. But it was a bit confusing. He thought, hang on a minute, is McGinn playing at the bottom of a diamond now? It was, and again, but it's still narrow. He thought, I don't quite get what we're trying to do here, other than he's trying to go for it. But and then, of course, then you hook Buendia as well for Bailey. And we've had some games, certainly in the early Gerrard games, I think we said we did a pod, and it was the first four games. We thought each time the subs have come on, they've impacted the games and he's made his decisions flawlessly. Now we've sort of seen the other side of the coin in recent weeks where the subs have just, I don't know what you'd call it, they've absolutely hamstrung us.
Mm-hmm. I mean, McGinn's an interesting one because he is... He's like it's good to watch him because he's like an entertainer almost for the crowd because of his effort.
And you can't not like him, can you? Because of that?
Yeah, he's very likable. But it's like, it's in the overall picture, does he actually give that midfield what we really need, which is kind of a bit of organisation and control because he is a bit ad hoc in what he does.
Some of his passing in the better. Second half was atrocious.
I mean, sometimes that's for the better, but a lot of the times it does... compromise what we're trying to do here.
Yeah, because it exposes his limitations. Whenever he's playing deeper, your passing has to be good. I mean, it doesn't need to even have to be good. It has to be excellent, you know, because you're cutting through the lines with those passes. You can't make a mistake. And some of the ones McGinn was hitting straight out or was overhitting it, or his passing's not good enough there. When he's further up the pitch, and like you said, he's like a grenade and he's bouncing off defenders and, you know, he's breaking and making a loose ball that other people can make advantage of, that's perfect position for him. But when he's deep, he can't do it.
By the way, folks, I don't believe that Manchester United are going to swoop in and pay like 50 million for McGinn for all the reasons that we actually say. And, you know, we've got I Love Meatball badges on. They don't. They're a bit more... rational, I would say, anybody who was going to buy him, that nobody's dropping that much money. But he can be an asset, and that's the issue here. Louise, I'm looking at him and I'm thinking you can upgrade there. And you take away the fact he's Brazilian and he used to play for Manchester City, and suddenly you're looking at somebody who's a bit, at the moment, is a bit meh.
I'm sorry, but with respect to him, you look at that Brazil team that he was actually playing in at that period, and it was a shit Brazil team. He was in the same Brazil team as Wesley.
Correct.
You know, you think who's the deep line midfielder for Man City? Man City and for Brazil, Fernandinho, probably the best, if not the second best in the world in that position. Luiz, isn't it close?
Yeah.
He's not even the best defensive midfielder at Villa.
He's had good patches, and you know we've always said, you know, he's only at the moment he's only 23, but it's just something about his overall demeanour and you know, off the pitch and whatever. I don't think I think he's more into the lifestyle than he is in the actual focus of being the best footballer he possibly can. But also maybe a lot of it's not at his feet, because I don't think he's the style of player that we need in that position.
No.
We need somebody a bit more blue-collar and practical, I think.
Yeah.
You know, like in Nakamba, you know, it's very easy to slate Nakamba in the past, but actually in those early games when Gerrard first came in, you saw what Nakamba can do when you give him a very simple, defined role and you actually limit what he's meant to do. You know, I don't need you to cross the halfway line and control our attacking play, especially with the players we've got now, when you add Coutinho, a fully fit Buendia and a very emerging Jacob Ramsey to the mix. You almost say to him, you just sit in the centre circle, let McGinn be 10 yards in front of you and you let your front four go and win us the game. I don't need you to do that. You just be really, really disciplined, and that would balance the team, and it would free up, you know, McGinn to give us that energy further up the field. It would allow, you know, Ramsey to not be taking the ball off the centre-backs, which I don't want to see him do unless he really has to. Luckily, he can carry the ball well in his defence, so every now and then it's okay, but... We just look so unbalanced.
I noticed Villa Twitter's favourite pundit has been suggesting that Buendia should be dropped.
Oh, God.
But I think Buendia it's the rest of the season. One use of it is to actually get Buendia down pat as a kind of superstar midfielder who makes things happen. In case Philippe Coutinho doesn't have a future beyond this season, but also, you know, there's an investment in that player and we need to get him down as the, you know, the kind of beating heart of that midfield in terms of its creative capacity.
Well, you need to get to a point with him where you trust him, because it's exactly what we lacked at Newcastle. We lacked it in the second half against Leeds, was that guy, and we've spoke about it so many bloody times in the Championship and in the Premier League, is that guy that used to be Grealish, it's the give me the ball, I'm going to go and win us the game today. I looked at that second half and you thought, right, you've got that front three who are all capable. You've got, in theory, two strikers on the field and you've got McGinn. Who's taking the responsibility today? Who's the guy who said, actually, I'm going to win the game today? And I'm looking at it going, I'm not seeing this.
You've got talented players
on paper. They're playing within their shell, aren't they?
Talented players on paper, talented players that sound good when they're coming in for this amount of money and that amount of money, and you know,
and also there's a lot of players who've done it before.
But as you said, in the game against Newcastle, in the game here against Watford, you know, in that second half against Leeds, there's nobody taking responsibility. There's nobody really leading. But there's nobody. This is the thing that frustrated me. You know, go back to the Grealish time when he never took free kicks. And we mentioned it on the podcast, and then a couple of days later, he was, you know, on his Instagram, he had clips of him practicing taking free kicks. But I want my Coutinhos and Buendias to be taking the free kicks. I want the maestros to be, you know, orchestrating free kicks.
Yeah, when you've got a free kick on the edge of the box, and you've got Luca Digne like off centre, perfect spot for a right footer, and you've got Philip Coutinho, who's probably one of the in the last
and he can hit it
10 Coutinho years in the Premier League, probably one of the best strikers of a ball. You think, hang on a minute. Come on,
yeah,
Phil.
I mean, I saw what they were doing. They were like, they were trying to make out that it was going to be a right footer taking it, and he just kind of nipped in with his little left foot to try to do something. But, you know, I you know, respect to Newcastle. Just play the percentages. Get somebody who can fucking hammer it and just hit it on target.
Make the goalie make a save. Because you never know what you can get, you know, when you're picking up the pieces and all those other fucking cliches.
Villa trying to be too fancy. Just let one of these guys become the leader on free kicks.
It's almost exactly like Smith, isn't it? It's like almost too much information, too much sort of, too many ideas.
Too many options
Too much fucking about.
I'm starting to think, step back and try and see the bigger picture here and think to myself, well, what are they doing? These players that they're buying, why are they buying them? Is there any sort of like psychological profiling being done on them? You know, are these leaders or these players when they can that you want in the trenches if the going does get a bit tough? Because you need a few of them in every squad. You're not even in the first team, you need a few of them in the squad. And you're just looking at yourself and you're thinking, Sanson, yes, nice touches and everything else, but clearly nobody trusts him or else he would be on the pitch. Louise, the same, nice touches and everything else, but he's not getting stuck in. We've spoken about McGinn already. And you're just wondering, Bailey, the money dropped in him. Now, I know he's been out with an injury, but Ramsey put the ball on a plate for him right in the last minute.
That summed up the game that moment.
Yeah, and a 30 million player should be able to trap a ball. If he kicks a shot wide, we'll criticise his shot, but trapping a ball, that's nothing to do with an injury. So what's going on with the supposed scouting of these players? I mean, you've everybody on Twitter going mental, praising up Lang and everything else and saying that he's done a masterstroke and everything else. I haven't seen a masterstroke come in from anybody he's signed yet.
I think Buendia's the only one you think he's looking like a good signing. I think Ings started well and has faded. You're looking across the pitch, and down the squad, and even on both sides of like the management, and you think, well, everybody has had really bright moments this season, but they've also had some horror shows, and that's the reality of why we're where we are. You know, on paper, do we have a top 10, potentially top 8 squad? Yes, but that doesn't count for shit if you can't get any consistency. You know, we're on the, you know, whatever date we're looking at, you know, you're sort of mid-February, and have we put in a 90-minute consistent performance? The only one you thought where we came close to it was probably a 1-0 win at Old Trafford, which in the end was a little bit sort of smash and grabby with a missed last minute penalty, but we earned our luck that day. But we've had little 20 minute periods here and there, but I'm still yet to see us control a 90 minute game of football.
I can happily write off this season because there's been a lot of mitigating circumstances in terms of getting our momentum going, and obviously there's been a change in management. But I want to see, as I keep saying, I want to see performances that actually allude to us being a force next season.
Yeah, agreed.
And with the quality of players that we've got, you would think that we're only a couple of pieces here and there away from actually being a team that legitimately would be talked about in terms of challenging for Europe. And we can actually boldly say, you know, the players and the management and the owners have been saying we've been going for Europe the last couple of seasons. But the supporters, you know, if you say that, you're going to get shouted down by a certain section. But I was hoping that this end of this season, we would get to the point where we started next season. And as a fan base, you're thinking, right, we're going to crack on here and we're going to be a force to, you know, to be dealt with.
I do wonder if the players are really struggling with that expectation. They just can't hack the expectation.
Well, they should be able to because, you know, you've got Martinez has just won the Copa America.
Well, I think he can.
Mings has played for England. You know, Lucas Digne's played for France at the top level. And, you know, you've got Danny Ings and Coutinho's no schmuck, obviously. And you know, Ashley Young's experience and he's won, you know, league titles, etc. And, you know, the other players like, you know, Watkins, they're in and around international squads. I mean, okay, but probably while the lockdown was on, but I don't know. I think there should be enough there to get you. Maybe we got rose-tinted glasses because you looked at that Watford team today and they never looked troubled by what we were trying
they
to
do. They were physical. They were physical. They had a plan and they stuck to it and they executed their plan well. We have a plan and we don't execute it well. And it's happened a few too many times that you can see what we're kind of maybe trying to do. And I only say maybe because I don't think it's that clear a plan.
And this is what will get the fan base irate, is if they don't see the potential of what can happen next season.
Yep.
And you think, you know, we're actually not going anywhere. We were promised continuous improvement. And actually, we're starting to corrode away here. And after all the shit that we've gone through as a fan base over the last...
decade.
That you're kind of hoping that you're going to be cut a break. And that's going to lead to a bit of frustration.
This is why the fans, I think, not just necessarily Twitter, etc., but the fans get accused of overreacting because our sort of threshold for bullshit, frankly, is very fine now. We see this shit coming over the horizon quickly now. And we're like, hang on a minute, we need to nip this in the bud before we end up going back to the dark days of Lambert, Sherwood, etc. You know, don't undo your hard work when you've done so much good work. You know, like they get a bit of a pass on that Leeds game for me. It happens, Leeds were good, but we played some great football. You get mental games like that. Newcastle and Watford back-to-back, to lose the games is one thing. To lose the games in the manner they have, you know, it maybe happens once, you can't do that twice.
I find myself sitting there in the hole thinking, what am I paying my money for here? Because all I'm seeing is overhit crosses.
It's Groundhog Day.
Misplaced passes. I'm seeing players feigning injuries for ages. The breaking up of play. The referees that can't control a game and get players off the pitch. There was a Watford player that was getting treatment.
And then he sat on the line, didn't he? The twat.
Decided to take treatment like an inch inside the pitch. Now, the referee should have been over there just dragging him off or flashing his cards around. They're obviously trying to break the momentum of the last 10-minute, you know, kind of fight back from Villa. But it happened against Newcastle. It happened here. It happened against Leeds, where everybody was lying down in cramp. And it's like, get a grip, referee, because I'm not wasting my time and my money sitting here watching this shit show of actually nothing's happening. Well, I want to see the ball in bloody play.
And the stats speak for themselves. You know, Villa are bottom of the table for teams keeping the ball in play. We cannot keep the game moving. And we've all said fucking weekly, we're a momentum team. And if you can't keep the ball on the pitch or keep the game flowing, you aren't going to win games. It can't be a coincidence that it's happened in the last couple of weeks. Newcastle disrupted the game. Other teams have managed to. Leeds did it, didn't they? Man City, whenever they've played us, they've fouled us all over the field. You just knock our momentum off and we have so little resilience. And I don't know why that is.
Right, start of the game.
Well, that's been hinted at already. That was Watford's first goal in 440 minutes. And today was the first Premier League home game that Villa haven't scored in this season.
Of course. We'd expect no less, but...
Yep.
Right, burning question of the week.
Right, well, there's two. Julian, have the narrow Stephen Gerrard tactics already been exposed as flawed?
Well, yes, Julian. I mean, we've kind of gone through what Watford did, and to the extent that Newcastle were barely troubled by them as well. There needs to be an evolution in game if that middle just in front of the back four has been closed down, for want of a better phrase, don't you think?
I don't know what the combination is, whether it's because of the fullbacks, whether it's coming from other positions, whether it's just the overall shape and system isn't working, if it's all a bit square pegs, round holes. I don't know what the solution is.
Because the way we get width is obviously for the fullbacks, because we're playing those essentially two number 10s. And how have we been caught out in the last few games? It's by those fullbacks being too far up the pitch on the counter. I mean, Cash, I don't know what he was doing at times.
No, but you would say the counter argument to that is the team that Gerrard built in Scotland has just beat Dortmund in Germany 4-2 this week. So.
Without Gerrard,
yeah. It's a case that maybe the formation and the system and isn't flawed, but it's...
The personnel just can't execute it.
Yes, the personnel aren't there to play the way he wants them to play at this stage.
Yeah. One last question before we go. Is the lack of a quality DM the answer to all our problems? Or does it run deeper than that? Maybe some of our squad aren't good enough to push to the next level. Yeah, that isn't the holy grail, is it? I don't think it's the missing link and everything clicks into place. What I will say, though, is this team is not a team of schmucks. You know, these are talented players we've spent a lot of money on. And we have seen evidence of them all doing, you know, great things. You just want them to do it consistently. You know, Bailey's obviously been out, so he'll take a few games to...
We might not see anything of him until next season, really.
But he'll need game time to... get in. Buendia probably needs more games, as I said. This second half of the season's main purpose is to set up next season. But they've got to show something. They can't just be waiting around, because this team's not going to hit the ground running next season unless they've actually got it, some self-belief from what's happened in these final games of the season. I don't subscribe to the fact that our squad isn't good enough. I think it's as good as it's been in the last decade or so. Just a couple of players, almost, you know, like the DM is more, I mean, people are saying, oh, you know, 50 million, Leicester, blah, blah, blah. It's not like throwing a shitload of money at that position.
It's just finding the right person.
Correct.
Just getting the right player to fit in, and that could be at any price point, really.
I mean, look at what we did with McGinn. Look at what Leicester paid for, you know, for Kante a few years ago.
The midfielder,
finding the right people.
Yeah, the midfielder I'm thinking about, the word I would use to describe is unambitious, because you've enough ambitious players as far as getting forward in that Villa team. You want the player
probably
that actually...
too many.
You actually want a player that enjoys playing in the centre circle. He doesn't really leave it that much.
Yeah, I mean, I remember speaking to Steve Round, and they were still looking for that kind of player for the Villa midfield, you know, then, when he was building the Villa engine. And I said, would you be looking for somebody like a Kevin Richardson? And he said, yeah, that's probably exactly the kind of player that would really benefit Villa at that time. And I think this time as well. Somebody who's
steady.
Super disciplined, but he's very good at linking up play as well. Just the simple passes keeps the clock ticking.
Just like
but
Man
also,
United had Roy Keane.
Also, he's a bit more physical, I would say, than Kevin Richardson. But
Richardson could mix it.
But yeah, he could mix it, but he wasn't as like fearsome, I don't think. Because he was so unassuming, you didn't even know he was there. But that was the beauty of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, just want to give a quick shout out. Somebody I forgot to shout out last week, a new My Old Man Said patron, Clive Kane. Thank you very much for signing up. Please do support us as we would give you the real verdict on Villa by becoming a My Old Man Said patron, and you will get access to Match Club, which we will be meeting up for the Brighton game, and obviously the rescheduled Leeds games will be the next offerings. We tend to meet up for the away games most, but also, you know, it's a constant thing 24-hour through the week anyway in the various channels. And also you'll get access to the extra My Old Man Said podcast extra channel for patrons who get exclusive shows there. There's more coming your way this week. So please do spread the word. Oh, also you can sign up as on an annual subscription and get 15% off, which is 2 free months. So please do go to myomansaid.com and click on the Patreon link there for more details. If you are listening to the show on Spotify or Apple, Spotify have brought in like a rating button. So please give it a high five if you would be so kind. And click on notifications as well, because you'll get a pop-up when every new show drops, so you can listen to it straight away. So thanks for listening. Any final words, gentlemen?
To quote the Alan Parsons Project, where do we go from here?
There's always the women's curling final to watch, which by the time this show goes out would have been over and done with.
Another wonderful stone. It is 2. Great Britain lead 10-3, and that's it. The handshakes come. It's the gold medal. Great Britain have won the Olympic title. It's been 20 years since we can say it's curling gold.
Right, until we get beat by Brighton, until we play Brighton, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
The only thing else in the game, really, before we go, is Watford fans just basically telling it as it is, singing, we're winning away, how shit must you be, we're winning away.
Fair.
There's not much you can really add to that. And the upper halt, the only thing they really could respond with is...
Elton John is fucking shit.
Elton John is fucking shit. Well, he's not as shit as Villa are playing at the moment. Especially his earlier albums.
At least Elton John turns up and puts on a performance.
Exactly, whether you like him or not.
Willing to make a sacrifice.
You're showing too much knowledge of Elton John there.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.